Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 315 of the podcast, also known as Week 1 of Max Fun Drive. I bet you didn't expect that little sweetness I put on the end of that, huh? Friends, colleagues, comrades, buddies, amigos, amies, janitors, it's my very first Max Fun Drive. I'm very excited. I always felt like watching the Max Fun Drive happen on the outside. It was like this cool club of people who were sort of more in the public radio realm. Something about fundraising seemed super legit to me. Now I'm on the inside. I got to tell you, feels real good to be on the inside. I have known Jesse Thorne, who founded Maximum Fun, for almost 20 years. I have known many of the people on its various podcasts for many years. I've been a fan of Max Fun and its podcast for many years. So it feels like a real priv, short for privilege, to be able to try and raise some money for these guys. So I welcome you to this episode. I welcome you to take into consideration pledging. It's a listener-supported network. Hopefully, we've already made that clear. I am taking this opportunity to ask listeners to pledge your support to the show. Max Fun Drive is also a huge celebration of all things Maximum Fun. You know that. There's going to be a little more information elsewhere in the episode. For now, I want you to enjoy this episode. I do also want to give you, as a special bonus, because this is the Maximum Fun my new puppy has, this very creepy stuffed koala that giggles. Yeah, it's horrifying. It haunts my dreams. And that is what it does. I only had to squeeze it once for you to hear all of that. Now I have to give it back to the dog. It's covered in slime. Enjoy.
One,
two,
three.
Okay. We've proven that we can count to three, I guess.
Yay.
We did it. Now, next week on our new podcast, we will make it all the way to 456 if we're very, very lucky.
My four-year-old can help us if we need to. If we need to go to 20 even, she's got us covered.
Ooh. That actually really is amazing. The sort of processes of a child brain wherein, you know, you can sort of achieve getting to a certain point, but then counting to 20 is great, but then 21 through 30, she's actually in pretty good shape because all she has to do is add. Listen, someone may not have thought of this yet. If I'm the first person that's telling her this, this is going to be very exciting. she just adds 1 through 9 to the word 20, she's getting right up there towards 30.
The thing that she stumbles on, and we mastered it with 20, but for some reason when we hit 30 and 40 and so on, she can't get it, is she wants to say 29, 2010.
Oh, sure.
And then I'm like, no, then 30. And you start over. And that's the hurdle that we keep. And she's like, oh, okay. And then she'll get 31 to 39, and then we're on 30, 10 again. So that's the thing we got to master.
Again, this is going to be very useful information for her. She's going to tell her to go ahead and become a Francophile, because the craziest thing that I never thought about with French is, of course, that, and this is just something that I never thought about logically, and until I was having a conversation with Brandon, my sweetie, about it. When we were sort of talking through French numbers, I was like, yeah, okay. And so then, 80 would be like 80 something. And he was like, well, what's that? What is that? And I was like, actually, that's just saying 420s. So they sort of gave up.
Yeah.
They sort of gave up a certain, now it's all just math. It's not just things have their own numbers. Now it's like, oh, I see. We've just done by the powers of 20 kind of. So in a sense, they're doing
that.
The same thing that your daughter wants to do, which is just keep adding tens and just keep adding, just kind of keep going with the numbers, and eventually people will do the math in their heads and they'll realize she's still saying the right thing.
I'll tell her that. She will like that because she thinks French is very fancy. So I'll tell her it's just it's sort of like French. It's not French at all, but it's similar.
Close enough. close enough. Have you been very, I imagine that you probably are, particularly with your background, but even just being, you know, sort of a smart, interested person, have you sort of experienced the, my children are science experience, experiments, part of parenting where it really is like, you're a fascinating entity.
I have. And what's worse is there is a part of me now that we have two that looks at the second one and says, you know, the first time around we did this.
Sure.
But what if this time,
that's right.
What if we tried something a little different and then we can compare results?
That's right. I think you owe it to society.
Because the first one has turned out pretty good so far. I mean, she's four, so, you know, we got a ways to go. But like so far, she's good for four. So I don't want to mess up the formula too much. But I mean, there are some things we could probably improve upon, some variables we could alter.
Sure. So. You want to do parenting 2.0. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to throw out the old operating system. Go ahead and just restart that computer. There may be some new bugs that you weren't aware of that you're going to have to encounter. So there may be some upgrades that you're going to have to do software wise for many years to come if you decide to throw everything out and start new.
Hopefully they will never hear this or discuss it ever, this conversation.
But also, is there a sense of being super aware of, like, I would imagine that certain decisions or certain, you know, modes of parenting are just sort of happening in the moment as they're happening because you don't really have time to plan, that there's stuff that goes on that just becomes more reactionary just because, you know, that's the nature of having children, I imagine. Again,
sure.
This is just me based on like not having kids, but but studying from afar. But so, you know, that's the thing I fear I would do would be to go like, now listen, she's great about this bath thing. What was it that we did to get her to, you know what I mean? Like, God, it's all so fuzzy now. I remember she didn't want to use the potty and then somehow we got her to use it.
That's, you know, I think what's hard about it, and I mean, I guess this is true about most things, you remember the stuff that went wrong or was hard or was bad a lot more clearly necessarily than you remember the stuff that was easy.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that like my oldest, we had a terrible time getting her to sleep. To this day, she doesn't like to sleep much. I don't know. She's like the girl from The Ring. She's awake all the time. She doesn't need much sleep. She just runs on less than the average 4-year-old.
Yeah.
But I remember vividly every step we took to get her to actually sleep through the night, more or less. I remember all those steps. And so I know, like with our second, we've already started doing things to be better at it. But potty training with our 4-year-old was so easy. It was like, I don't even know what happened. We started it. And then I feel like 2 weeks later, she was using the potty. And I know we did something in those 2 weeks, but I have no idea what we did. What did we do to get there? I don't know.
Right. See, that's exactly it. That's what I'd be afraid of, too. You know, I just went to a little afternoon get together with friends who do have kids. So there was some fun playing on the rug happening and so forth. And and our friends have a little girl that they're potty training and she's doing great. I mean, listen, I want to give everyone a graphic warning. It's not particularly graphic, but just in case people decide that they want to slightly tune out. But they've been very successful on the number one side. They're really struggling with the number two side. And I understand that to be, you know, very normal. But in my way of trying to be helpful, I was like, listen, there's a lot of stuff that she's starting to become very aware of adults. She's very aware. She kind of wants to seem like a grown-up sometimes. This is a sticking point for her. What I'd like to do is for all of us to just very, very loudly, while she's not in the room, talk casually about how fun it is to poop in the toilet. And that is going to seep into her unconscious And she will finally succumb to that peer pressure. So the people who were willing spent an inordinate amount of time speaking at full voice about, like, you know what I love to just come home and do sometimes, especially if you've been traveling. It just feels so good to poop in the potty, doesn't it? Don't you love pooping in the potty? I do.
I love that tactic. I think that's really good. And what'll be, we could try that with our youngest when it comes time to potty train her. And what'll be great is our older one, Charlie, she will be all too willing to be part of that and have a very loud conversation about pooping, I guarantee.
It's going to be great.
So we can use her.
It's going to be great. If it, depending on what everyone feels is the most adult, you could either do like it. It could happen at like a high tea where everybody is sipping tea with their pinkies out. It could happen with fake martinis. I just want you to feel free to just cut loose and whatever you think is going to be the most, quote, grown up scenario. Feel free to dive right in.
I'm going to make sure that when we do that, I want to, because we have friends who also have kids that are around our kids' age. And then we have some friends who don't have kids. And I only want to invite anybody who doesn't have kids to that interaction. Please. And make them be part of it.
Please. Please.
To make it as uncomfortable for everyone as possible.
It's a pleasure. It would be an absolute pleasure. Those get-togethers are always the ones where I realize that I am very much, and I think honestly it's a reason, certainly not the reason. A lot of it has just been like, you know, what happens to many people, which is you sort of, life keeps throwing things at you that make it hard to just make that final decision to go ahead and take the plunge and do it. And so sometimes I think that my life has been that thing where it's like, oh well, I let circumstance sort of dictate the big stuff, and then suddenly I go, oh, I never got around to having kids. Like, I'm very much one of those of this generation. But I think another part of it is that I have long spent this time being the fun friend, the fun, like, kid, mm-hmm. Oh, we go over to our friend Oscar's and Ursula's at Thanksgiving, and I just immediately go over to August, their kid, and I just play with her. Like, that's to the point where she thought I was a child, and she thought Brandon was my father, which we only realized towards the end of the night the first time this happened.
As a parent, that's so appreciated.
We were like, Yeah. We were like, I had barely spent any time with any of the adults at the get together, and then I was like, oh, I think we have to go home. And August was like, can you ask your daddy if you guys can stay a little bit longer?
Oh, no.
And I was like, can I ask my what now? My who now? And she points at Brandon and she's like, will your dad let you, or could you come over tomorrow? And I was like, then you just sort of look back, you reflect back on the whole night and think like, oh, she thinks I'm just a giant child because I'm 5'10". So I'm just like a gigantic child who's able to reach all the toys on the top shelf.
But that is such a wonderful role to play in your parent friend's life, that I so appreciate my friends who, because I, you know, it's kind of, it's still novel, I think, in some ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, kids, yeah, let's play with the kids. And it's,
yeah,
like,
it's not exhausting. Yes. You're not dragging in your own parenting woes into the scenario. And so, yeah, there's part of me, mm-hmm, that really has been like, oh no, I'm so comfortable, like, just being really fun. And like, if a kid has a tantrum, I'm the patient one who's like, you know what? I got this. But
that's,
I feel
great,
like,
though,
the second I had kids, I'd be like, oh, I hate children. I mean, not that there aren't certain things that take over that keep you from,
sure,
feeling that way most,
sure,
of the time. But do you feel
it's interesting.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, I wasn't, you know, it's weird. I was never much of, especially like a baby person. I was never the first one to be like, oh, can I hold your baby or can I see your baby? It's just not. It's not that I don't like babies. I like babies just fine.
Yeah.
It was just never me until, yeah, I had mine. And now, yeah, mine, I'm that way about. But even to this day, I like other kids, but I'm not necessarily interested in like doing a bunch of stuff with them.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
They look great. They're so cool.
They
I'm going to go back
great
to mine.
They look great. Like, it's a nice manicure. Like, I like admiring other,
yeah,
people's manicures, but I don't need to get a manicure. Hey, they look great. They,
yep,
look great over,
awesome,
there.
I'm good. I have these and I like them. And That's fine. It was weird. It really flipped for me. Like, oh, okay, thank goodness. My kids, I really do like and am interested in, because I was never much of like a kid baby person until I had them.
Yeah. No, I think you're, I mean, you're, you, I definitely have friends who are like that. And in the way that pet owners are obnoxiously make light comparisons to children, which I have mm-hmm. never believed in and have resisted, but now I have a puppy and I feel like all bets are off. Like, I really would, like, whenever anyone would be like, well, you know, it's like my dogs are my kids, I'm always like, let's not go there. I have dogs, but I don't want to be the person that says my dogs are my kids, because all of my friends with children will roll their eyes at me and slap me. And that remains that. True. Yeah. Yeah. That remains true, but I've never had a puppy before. And that actually, that has caused me to want to make those comparisons in a way that I didn't really feel like I wanted to before. But when you go through house training and this child is chewing on everything, / this puppy is chewing on everything, like, those moments are a little bit more, you know, like, for the first time, sure. I'm having the sort of like, oh, I can't get anything done. Like, I just have to watch this young thing all the time to make sure that it doesn't kill itself by chewing on something it shouldn't and swallowing it, and then it's all over. Mm-hmm. So there's some of that happening, and I am very, very aware that it is still like 0.001% of what, you know, parenting a baby entails.
But that's a big part of the job, in all honesty. Especially once they start crawling, that's just the majority of your day is spent keeping them from choking on things that they find on the floor. I mean,
yeah,
that's so it's not that far off in some cases.
There you go. I hope he never gets up onto just walking around on two legs all the time, because things are really going to be tough if this puppy becomes bipedal.
Or you take that show on the road, you know. There are a lot of TV shows.
That's a good point. We all love seeing four-legged animals walk on two legs. It's still very mm-hmm. novel to us. Did you grow up with pets? Did you have pets when you guys were growing up?
We did. I have two sisters, and my sisters and I have always loved cats. We've always been cat people. My dad did not like any animals ever. And so we would have this sort of system where we would beg and plead and finally talk my dad into letting us have a cat. Because my mom was always fine with it, but my dad was always against. And so we would like get a cat. And then after a while, because inevitably we weren't doing, like, we weren't cleaning the litter box and doing the stuff we were supposed to do, my dad would just find somebody that he knew and give our cat away.
Oh no, this happened more than once.
More than once, like, cats would just, and we'd be like, no, and he's like, you didn't take care of it. And so then, like, this cycle would repeat itself, like, us begging and pleading, and then after a couple of years, like, fine, you can get a cat again, and the same thing. But always, we had this whole series. I had a lot of Isadoras. I don't know why I always wanted to name a cat Isadora, but I had a whole line of Isadoras.
Wait, did your sisters have any say in this, or were they also very on board for Isadora?
As the oldest, I think I got to like dictate a lot. So mm-hmm. yeah, Isadora was, I got to decide that.
Isadora, God, where did that come from?
I don't know. I named the first cat I ever had Isadora, and I had a whole line of Isadoras. We tried one time, my dad's name is Tommy, and one time we named a cat Tommy Girl.
Oh, very sneaky. If he falls in love with his namesake, mm-hmm. he'll never be able to let that cat go.
We thought that would that would work, and that it still didn't work. It's still sometimes it was like he'd show us like a house, we'd drive by and he goes, you know who lives in that house?
Oh no.
Isadora 3.
Oh, it's like, God. No. That's amazing. I mean, I feel like, do you remember his resistance becoming like less and less as the experiences of these cats went on, because he just knew the inevitability of getting rid of them anyway? Did he start to agree more quickly? Like, yeah, sure. You guys want another Isadora? Sure. Let's try that out. See how that flies.
Definitely. Yeah. 'Cause my youngest sister, she's much younger than me. She was actually born when I was a senior in high school. She was allowed through her childhood not just to have cats. She had a dog at one point. She had a guinea pig. I think she had all kinds of animals that my dad would never have let us have. Mm-hmm. And so I think over the years, my middle sister and I, we wore him down to the point where my youngest sister got the benefit of that and got to have lots of animals.
Yeah, no kidding. Childhood. Did they all? And so, yeah, they all made it through. Nobody was readopted or reassimilated into a new household, a new mysterious household.
The only one, the dog, and we should have known, like, it's just none of us, dogs require a lot more, at least my perception, they require more time and energy than I think cats do.
Mm-hmm.
Cats just kind of hang around, at least that's what it's, we have two cats now, and they're just kind of hang around. Like, if we're sitting somewhere, they might want to hang out with us, but most of the time, as long as we're feeding them and they have water and clean their litter boxes, like, they're chill. They don't need too much from us. My perception is that when you have a dog, that's a little bit more of a relationship. Like, you got to put a little more energy into it.
Yeah.
And I think that the dog was what my sister realized. That was like a step too far for her, because she even finally said, I don't know that I can keep up taking, especially she got into high school and she was off with her friends and doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And so my parents said they were going to send the dog to obedience school.
Oh, no.
And then they also gave that dog away. I've seen.
He's, honey, he's good still though, at school. He's just, now he's getting his PhD. He's loving this educational process. Please, let's not force him home.
That's what we would joke about. Like, oh, so is the dog still at obedience school? Is your dog still? But no, it was great though, because we've seen pictures since then, and she was adopted by this woman who already had a bunch of dogs, and she has another dog, and like, they're all in her house, and they wear little sweaters, and they're adorable, and the dog is fat and happy and loved and cared for. So it was probably for the best.
Yeah, yeah. No, listen, we have these, life is filled with ephemeral experiences. In your case, it was with a series of cats who all had the same name, which, let's all just acknowledge, does feel a little bit like a middle reader book that you need to write, because it's very like the eccentric families in books, in those books that you read, where you're like, you're just at that, you know, 10, 11-year-old age where you're like, why isn't my family more eccentric? Like, why doesn't my family have a secret room at the top of the house that has a, you know, a dollhouse that my, that, like, there's just always some sort of like, why don't we have a family that has a bunch of dogs wearing sweaters? Like, the multiple Isadoras feels like it needs to be incorporated into something, because it definitely, to me, has a sort of, it's like approaching a Wes Anderson film. It's approaching, like, did Margot Tenenbaum also have a series of cats named Isadora that her dad kept giving away?
I'll have to send him that idea. Hey, Wes Anderson, did you need some quirky ideas for a quirky character in one That's of your quirky right. movies?
I'm sure he'll really appreciate it. I'm sure he'll really appreciate it.
Jennifer Varney.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting. This is unprecedented. I've never had a male friend. Let me finish. Because I have had one. Come on the show with me outside of the summer or a live show just to chitty chat with me. But there's a very special reason that that's happening, and you're a very special friend.
Well, thank you. You're a special friend of mine as well. And it's Max Fun Drive time.
Thank you for knowing why I brought you. I was afraid I was going to have to explain the whole thing to you from soup to nuts. If you can tell me where that expression comes from, I will get you a subscription to Max Fun.
It is from a store that sold nuts and also soup. One end of the store was the walnuts. The other end of the store was the soup.
I absolutely don't believe you.
Okay. Well, it's
so
a lie.
Good job. Good job. I do not owe you anything.
Yep.
Except my thanks for coming on to talk about Max Fun Drive with me. Now, let's tell these wonderful listeners a little bit about Max Fun Drive. And I want to do that because, of course, this is my first time. I've been doing the podcast 7 years.
Yeah.
Yet it's my first Max Fun Drive.
It's very exciting.
I already feel like I know a lot about it. I want to invite our wonderful, wonderful listeners who, by the way, have been, if they are longtime listeners, listening to the show at no cost to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time to pull all those emotions back, bring them to the forefront. Know that if you're supporting my show on Max Fun, you're also supporting the entire
network, and it is a listener-supported network, which I've always loved.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's be honest. If you're listening to this, you know that Janet Varney is one of the most wonderful human beings on the planet, which I say, I know we're being jokey here. We're having jokey good times, but it is 100% true. There's nobody that knows you that I know who does not love you. And
don't do this right now.
For the people who are out there
I'm
listening, this is your chance
it's
to give
very
back.
Emotional. That's I'm getting
what,
very emotional.
That's what this is about.
How dare you be sincere during a drive?
Just imagine. This is the only time I'm ever sincere. When I go home, the mask goes on. My wife doesn't even know my middle name.
I do know that the joy that you have in your life probably is due to Max Fun.
Yes. This is really like becoming a participatory member of the community around the JV Club.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
You already listen every week. You love the show. I think it's...
I hope you do.
This is your chance to say thank you and really feel like you're helping the show continue. It's super easy to do also. May I?
Would you?
I will.
Where can I go?
You go to MaximumFun.org.
That sounds like a website.
Donate.
That sounds like a website.
It is a website.
MaximumFun.org/donate?
Yeah.
That's very simple.
And it's .organized.
Oh.
If you're a big fan of the life-changing magic of tidying,
yes.
They've already done it on the site. It's very tidy.
It's very crisp.
It is very organized.
Anything they didn't need, they thanked it for its service and they let it go. So
exactly.
Everything you're getting is pure MaxFun gold.
Yes.
MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yes.
I'm sure you've already gone there. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm listening to podcasts that I love that are listener-supported,
yes.
I will be doing something else and I will hear them say, hey, the only reason we're able to do this show is with your support. And I make a mental note to myself to do it. How often do I actually do it? Like, it takes me 6 to 7 times of hearing that to actually sit down and do it. Now that I am on the other side of that, I realize, just do it the first time.
Yeah, when you hear it.
Because then you don't feel bad. Because I will listen to, like, 7 more episodes and go, you know what? I meant to just, it's so easy.
I forgot to do it back then. As soon as the urge strikes you, you go and do it. You set up, you give just a little bit of information, including your credit card. You set it up.
Yeah.
So it's a recurring monthly contribution. It can be as little as $5 a month. That's like a cup of coffee at a very expensive place.
Also,
yes.
I have it so where I start to enter my credit card number and my phone and computer fill the rest in. I have precious little to do.
Yeah.
Precious little to do.
Same. Hard
when
same.
When I'm paying for something.
Yeah.
Everything has become too easy. Why wouldn't I have already done it?
Here's the only curveball. You're going to be asked what shows you listen to. That's not an informal poll. You have to check the box for the JV Club with Janet Varney.
Please check that box.
That ensures that a portion of your contribution, the lion's share, goes to all of the shows you listen. They will split the lion's share of whatever you contribute. So that is the way you make sure that Janet benefits directly from your membership. Check the box for the JV Club.
To be honest with you, it's possible. I didn't even realize that. I was just going to have them spread it all the way across. Now that I know that I can be selfish and say, but you know what? Considering that I personally said that I would get the goal of 25,000 new subscribers,
by yourself.
New pledgers, I said I would take that on all by myself.
Sure.
And everything else was gravy and all other podcasts can just like, meh.
Pound sand.
Kick a few here, a few there in. I have a tremendous responsibility.
Yes.
And I signed a legal contract.
Well.
It may have been a bad idea. Max Fun didn't ask me to. I brought in an independent lawyer. I didn't ask them to sign anything. I just signed it and had it notarized in front of them. They were very uncomfortable with it. I insisted. I said, 25,000. It's on me, guys. And then I patted myself on the back.
How much did you pay that lawyer?
Like $25,000.
That was a bad idea.
Well, look, I wanted to make sure it was airtight.
Janet needs your help, people. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm in a lot of trouble.
She got help.
I'm in a lot of trouble.
Oh, my goodness. Please.
Please do it, guys. Also, we got some awesome gifts that are available to you. We're going to get into that.
We'll tell you later.
Yeah, let's save it.
For now, I'm going to go talk to Janet about her rising legal debts.
I'm in a lot of trouble.
And you enjoy the rest of this episode.
I'm in so much trouble.
Until we come back. Don't worry. I don't know if I can help you, but I'm going to try.
Thanks. Where did you grow up, Sydney? Where in these United States?
Largely where I live now in Huntington, West Virginia. But my dad, when we were younger, my dad used to work for the CSX Railroad. And as anybody who has ever worked there, had family who worked there might know, you move around a lot. It's sort of like with military families, they move around a lot. Railroad families move around a lot too.
This is the first time hearing about it. I did not know that was true of railroading families. I'm really learning something here.
Yeah, that you get transferred as you kind of climb up the ladder to different positions, you get transferred around a lot. So we like started out in Huntington, and then we lived in Richmond, Virginia for a while, and Baltimore, Maryland for a while, and Cincinnati, Ohio for a while, and Waycross, Georgia. And then finally, eventually, back to Huntington. That's always everybody's goal, is like they're trying to get back home, and you just have to, it's like quantum leap. You just take enough transfers until you get the leap home.
Listen, everything that you're saying is, again, part of the children's story. I can only fictionalize your entire life now. I really appreciate that you used the metaphor of a ladder, because train tracks really just kind of look like one long horizontal ladder. I also feel that this idea that you are a family of adorable hobos who are working for the railroad and really just stopping all these different places till you finally take the last train home. It's all, now that might be more of a country song, but it could potentially go in the same movie.
I realized it sounded that way. As I said, like, railroad families move around a lot. That's exactly what I pictured, was our family just like...
Oh, so you live on trains.
With our bindles.
So you live in a railroad car. That's how it works if you work for the railroad.
That's exactly it. I'm glad I gave an accurate impression.
Me too. What parts of your, like, when you were a teenager, had you guys settled back in Huntington Beach again at that point, or in those formative kind of like tumultuous adolescent years, were you also bopping from place to place?
No, by the time I was a teenager, we had settled back in Huntington, which I think was good. And so I was kind of able to go to the same school for a while and live in the same neighborhood and make friends and that kind of stuff.
Did you have holdover friends from your first time there that you were like, hey, guys, I'm back?
No, you know what's funny? We literally, even though I was born here, we did not actually, my parents didn't live in this city where I was born when I was born. My mom came back and stayed with her parents right at the end of the pregnancy so that she could go to the doctor she knew and the hospital she knew and all that stuff. But then after I was like 2 or 3 weeks old, she went back to, I think, Richmond is where they lived at the time. So even though I was born here, we didn't even technically live here at the time.
I gotcha. And were there places that you guys were living that you really felt like, no, this is this place I want to actually stay? Or did you have an awareness of that? Was it more just like, life is happening to me, my parents are telling me we're moving again, you know, I don't have a strong feeling about this place any more than I did about the place before?
The only place that I would say was like that was when we lived in Georgia. I have a lot of like, it was the last place too, so I was the oldest, so I remember the most about Georgia as well. And I was there long enough to like, I made friends and I had kind of started to establish the things I liked, and I got to decorate my room, and I was kind of becoming a person by then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was a hard move, and we ended up back home, which was home to my parents but not really home to me, because I hadn't actually ever lived there, you know, in any conscious way.
Sure.
And so that was probably the one that was hard to leave, because I liked my life there. I liked my friends. I liked all the stuff. I knew somebody who had Super Mario Brothers 3, and I could go to their house anytime I wanted. So
that's already enough said. And how old were you? So how old were you when you did move and settle finally in West Virginia?
I would have been 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the time you became a teenager, you definitely had really settled in and sort of did you go to a high school that was kind of fed in by the middle school that you had gone to? Were you sort of with a wave of people that you'd known since you were 9?
I will say I wasn't the best necessarily at making friends. So even though, yes, the middle school I went to fed into my high school, I wasn't very good at keeping holdover friends. And it was our high school, the one that I attended, was a recently consolidated school. Mm. So it was really big, especially for a West Virginia school. We had 2,000 people in our high school, which was large by our standards. And so it was nice, though, because I kind of ended up finding a whole new group of people through, I did a ton of theater when I was in high school. And so between theater and like show choir, I found my new group.
Oh yeah. Listen, I've said it before, but the theater department is like the Statue of Liberty of high school. Just you can bring me all of your misfits, bring me everyone. Bring me you're tired, you're poor. I admittedly have never made the comparison to the Statue of Liberty, so this is a real first, but
it's a great one though. It's really
huddled,
true.
Your huddled masses, your huddled rejects yearning to be free and feel accepted somewhere. It's just a great, I really do feel like it's such a great opportunity for a bunch of people who don't know where they fit in to kind of find a bunch of people who feel like they don't fit in.
It really was. I always encourage, because after, so I went through not just our high school theater program, but like our community theater as well. That we have a lot of theater in this area, which again sounds odd for West Virginia, but we have a lot of community theaters and children's theaters and stuff. And so I had the benefit of all that. And then eventually Justin and I we directed some of those children's theater shows after we got older. Yeah. And I was so quick to encourage like any parents I knew, like put your kids in theater. It was the best thing for me.
Nice.
It was so good. Yeah. I was so shy and nerdy and scared and didn't know what to do with myself. And I wasn't even necessarily that I found people who were just like me. I found other people who were shy and nerdy and scared and didn't know what to do with themselves. And we figured it out together. It was such a great thing for me as a kid.
Did you, and how does show choir compare to that? Is that sort of a similar dynamic or was that more polished in some way?
I would say it was similar. Not quite as, I would say like the theater community was almost like all accepting. Like you could be as nerdy and weird as you wanted to be in the theater community. The show choir community, it was a little more competitive. It was a little more about like, you still wanted to be cool. I don't know why we thought we were cool in show choir. At least this was my show choir. People thought that they were cool. And then I look back and I'm like, we are wearing these sequin blue dresses. Like when the guys are wearing sequin vests and like nobody looks cool. No, but we thought we were. So it had a little more of an edge on the show choir than the theater world.
Right. And so when show choir is, it was through my podcast that I became familiar with the concept of show choir because we definitely had like, I'm sure we had a version of that at my high school, but I guess I was just so insular and sort of self-absorbed that if it wasn't something I was doing, which was next to nothing, I had like zero awareness of it. I don't think it was called show choir, but was it like you guys go out and compete against other schools and like you go to the regional show choir conference?
Yep. That was it is exactly like that. We would go to competitions and you always thought like it was also a great excuse. And I think a lot of extracurriculars in high school are probably used this way. But like you'd go on long bus trips with like long co-ed bus trips. And it was a great excuse to like have a place to go make out with people and nobody knew about it. And it's similar to theater, like everybody's changing backstage. And so it feels very risque and like, oh, I'm part of something that's so grown up and kind of bad. And so there was always that element to show choir. But yeah, we would go around to different schools and do competitions. And like we did one at Universal Studios once, which I think every show choir does just so that you can like take the kids on a trip there and that kind of thing.
Is that Universal Studios Florida or Hollywood?
Florida.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I'm a West Coast person. I never lived on the East Coast. So I really have to reshuffle my expectations of what when people say they went to someplace that sounds familiar. Like, we got to go to Disney. Some people just say Disney. And then I really am like, oh, I don't know. This could be anything. And then I realize, oh, you're from the East Coast. Like, Disney means Disney World to you. It absolutely does not mean Disneyland.
Yes. Yeah, that is definitely true.
So you were participating in these back of the bus makeouts?
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, yeah, I had my show choir boyfriend.
Nice.
So I felt pretty cool about that I had met through theater. So I mean, doubly cool.
Oh man! So you guys were doing both. Was that how did that work? If and when you broke up, or did you? It's not Justin, is it?
No, you know, no, it's not who I'm referencing, but because Justin was not in show choir. Justin would never have done show choir. It's just not his scene. He was in the band, and if you were in the band, you looked down on the show choir because you knew they were
hierarchy.
Nerds.
The hierarchy is so great.
Yeah, because that's what he would tell you. He had the skills to play a musical instrument. I just sang and danced.
Oh, sure.
No, we did meet through theater, strangely enough, though. That wasn't who I was referencing. But yeah, Justin and I met doing community theater, and we knew each other since I was like 12. We grew up together, and like I said, not show choir, but definitely through theater.
You had to get this other guy out of your system. But
it was all very like high school dramatic. Like we broke up, and it was right before prom, and we were supposed to go to prom together. So we went to prom together anyway, because otherwise we couldn't have gone. And so then we went, and it was like, I still love you. And I was like, I don't know if I want us to be together. It was all, you know, it was very high school.
Yeah.
And then we weren't, which was good, because then, you know, I married Justin eventually, and that all worked out for the best.
Well, that was my question, was sort of when you broke up, like we broke up, it leaves things kind of wide open for it to be mutual, for it to be, you know, one person wanted, the other person didn't. And then the sort of very adult kind of, I guess, decision to, you know, we'll still go to prom together, which I need to ask you, when you say otherwise we couldn't have gone, what does that mean? Does that mean like you had bought tickets, or you were like, we wouldn't have anyone to go with if not each other because we broke up too late in the game?
That mainly that. I mean, it was, you know, and it's that high school thing where like we had a friend group that we were both very much part of. And so one, it was way too late to find other dates, which of course we could have gone alone, but we both would have wanted to go stag with the same group of people.
Yeah.
So that would have been weird on some level, we thought. And then I'd already gotten like a dress and stuff, and that seemed like a waste to just not go.
Yeah.
And we both kind of wanted to go. So I, in that sense, we, you know, we couldn't go otherwise. I guess we could have. But
did it feel,
we just thought it was easier just to stick with each other.
But did it feel mutual when you guys broke up and then he surprised you with telling you, I still have feelings for you? Or were you the instigator? And so perhaps in the back of his mind, he was like, well, listen, if she still wants to go to prom with me, this thing might still have a chance.
I, you know, in retrospect, I think I was probably the instigator. I would have loved to believe it was mutual at the time. Like, no, we both agree this is for the best, because I want to be the bad guy. But in retrospect, I think it was largely my doing. And so then when I was hit with that, I was like not totally surprised. And I probably shouldn't have agreed to go to prom, because I knew. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this now as an adult, but at the time as a teenager, it's just like, yay, I still get to go to prom.
Right.
This will be fun. My friends are all there. We're going out to dinner. It's great.
What did your prom dress look like?
I don't know why. Because this doesn't feel like me, but I know I did this every time. I would always get a prom dress that looked sort of like a Renaissance princess kind of dress. They all were like empire waist and flowy, and like my mom would curl my hair with all these ringlets. I think I always wanted to sort of look like the Princess Bride.
Oh, was there a reference that you think may have crept in unconsciously, if not consciously? Princess Bride's a good one.
Yeah, I think it was always going for a buttercup look, probably. But I don't, it feels so weird because like I'm not a very feminine person. Like, I'm not real girly. I don't wear dresses. I don't know. It's weird when I look back and go, I did that every prom, every homecoming. Anytime I had to dress up, I was like full princess.
That's so amazing.
I don't know.
I mean, I think, yeah, that's I think there's something really interesting there, though, that this idea of sort of like that you have to turn it up to 11. You know what I mean? If it's going to be as soon as it becomes an experience that you associate with something that's sort of outside of the norm for you anyway, that you would then kind of like totally recenter your priorities specific to that and be like, well, this is okay. Well, this is a serious event and this is an event that calls for a certain type of girl. And if I'm not that girl, what would I want to be? Who would I want to be? You know, who is this kind of girl? Well, listen, Princess Buttercup is very pretty. It's a great movie. You know, it's funny. There's still comedy there. Like there she's very, you know, it's and I think I would like to say, I think I was sort of obsessed with like boy clothes when I was in high school, and also like the sort of, I think the theater department for me was kind of included that sort of derring do where I became that kid who was like, well, why can't I play the Pirate King? You know what I mean? Like the sort of certainly would not have been the girl who tries out for the football team, but was into the sort of like, you know, the gender bending or the androgyny of what kind of theater allows. Like I did get to play Puck, which felt like, you know, the ultimate like, aha, I beat the system. Like, no, you didn't beat the system. Plenty of women have played Puck. You're not, you haven't cracked this whole thing wide open in any way, shape or form. But I wanted to, like, I definitely did the same thing where, like, I think part of me, you know, when I went to my own, I went to one school prom with my friend who, by the way, I had also gone out with and who we did go to prom together, even though we weren't together. It was kind of like, well, what, you know, hey, for old time's sake kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But for my own prom, I did go with my girlfriend and we wore our, you know, we wore our pretty vintage dresses, but we wore combat boots. So we did feel like we were still, you know, being sort of boyish. But like every other part of the dress was, again, just to your point, it was so feminine. There was like lace and satin. And I had like a velvet, like a black velvet ribbon around my neck. Like a choker. And then, yeah, curled like ringlets. And I think I was wearing like, you know, like black velvet gloves, even though the dress was this sort of flesh tone thing. So it felt like it really does. Like looking back, it's like, oh, it sort of was like half the elements that I thought you were supposed to do. And then everything else was like, well, I've always wanted to wear this. So I guess I'll incorporate that into this thing, even if it makes zero sense.
But the choker would have been very in at the time, right? That was like,
yeah, that's true.
It was like the height of cool chokers, even though I guess they're back now. My 18-year-old sister tells me they're back now.
So. Now when I put on a choker, I just feel like it looks like I have created the like look at the thinnest point of my body and notice how the rest of my body is not that thin. I feel like that's what a choker that's what a choker accentuates now is like, oh, look at this. Oh, look at this area. Oh, and then everything widens out from there. Got it. That's not a body positive way of looking at a choker, but that is actually exactly how I feel now.
No, I felt like it was kind of a weird thing to come back. Like the things that have come back, a lot of stuff makes sense to me, but the chokers, I was like, really? That's a, okay.
Yeah,
well,
here come those chokers. The one that's kind of bothering me the most right now is, and it really is bothering me, is like I was flipping through a magazine and saw that some incredibly, of course, very, very thin, shapeless, beautiful, willowy young girl was wearing like a suit jacket and bike shorts. And I was like, no. I mean, I sort of remember bike shorts as a thing. Like I remember in LA Story, Sarah Jessica Parker is wearing bike shorts, like on a date with Steve Martin or when she's working at this, like sort of esprit kind of store, might actually be esprit.
Yeah.
But like overall, my dad is a huge cyclist. Like I grew up wearing bike shorts and being very self-conscious about it because I would go cycling with my dad for like long distance rides and stuff. And it was like, it never occurred to me that I didn't have to wear cycling gear because my dad raised me and like he was a cyclist. So I had my own little jersey and my own little bike shorts. And so it was never like, oh, I could not wear these. And so
when I see, like, seeing a girl with, like, just no hips and no inner thighs and just nothing happening, just two little sticks wearing bike shorts and a blazer and, like, probably a choker, I really got a head full of steam about it. I was like, no, we are not going to be wearing bike shorts as a style. No. But that's out there right now, Sydney. It's out there.
Oh, I can't do that. See, bridge too far.
Yeah.
No. I felt like the day that I put on a pair of yoga pants and then looked at my little sister and went, okay, you're right. I like these. That was the last big step forward for me.
Yeah,
I'll wear these. These seem about right for this point in my life.
It's a revelation.
Wear the yoga pants.
It's a revelation. Anything that, I mean, when I realized, like, oh, I've come full circle to where I was in high school, which was like the baggier the better, the schlubbier the better. I was very comfortable most of my time in high school. And I sort of very quickly adopted that when things that were like a cross between sort of Scandinavian and Japanese started introducing the like beautiful cocoon dress where you have no shape at all, but it's like there's something about it that's very chic. I was like, I've come home. I'm basically wearing pajamas. This is amazing.
I think that's great. I think that's a great moment that I think we all get to at some point where, like, I had this especially after med school, and then I did my residency, and then it was like I had to have a job. I had to be like a professional doctor person. And so I bought clothes that I thought, like, this is what I wear now. These are the clothes that are assigned to me in this profession. Right. And so I bought things that I thought I was supposed to wear, and I wore all that for a while, and I never felt really comfortable, or I didn't bother looking in the mirror and be like, you look good today. It was just like, no, this is the uniform. This is what you wear at this point in your life when you do these things. And I feel like I've come around to the other side where, no, I'm going to get rid of things that I don't like to wear, because why am I wearing? And like, I'll pick things that I actually like, oh, I'm comfortable. This is me. It's a nice point to get to, but it took me a long time to come back around.
What would you say if you had to give an example of something that you were like, well, I guess this is expected of me. What would be an outfit that you'd be sort of happy to move on from?
So when I first started as a physician, like out of my training, I went and got like a ton of like, I thought since I was a female physician, I needed like button downs and dress slacks, but they needed to look feminine. And so like I had a lot of prints and things that just aren't me. I'm not saying they're bad. It's just not me. Like I don't wear like a lot of printed things. I don't wear like blousy things with like lace or floral things. But I owned a lot of those kinds of blouses and prints and like those types of things to wear with like really nice tailored dress pants. And then I bought heels, which I hate heels, and I don't own any now. I just can't do it. It's just not me. And I bought them because I thought, well, I'm a grown-up now. This is what my Barbie used to look like, I guess. So
my medical Barbie.
And she was grown up, so I guess this is what I do. And so that was what I tended to wear. And I think about like I mean really like lace and flowers and things. I don't know where all that came from. And now I have some of those remnants like in the back of my closet that I'll find and I'll be like, did I wear this? And this was like, I don't know, 5 years ago, not that long ago. Did I wear this?
Well, but it's really interesting because I feel like you can draw a line from the sort of idea of the prom, right, as well, which is, you know, you really responded to theater and you know, it spoke to you. And so this idea of looking at certain elements of life as being kind of a thing you're trying on or a role that you're playing. I mean, maybe I'm totally oversimplifying. I'm sure I am. But this idea of like, well, I want to have, here's this new experience. I don't really know how to do it, or at least I don't know what I'm supposed to look like when I'm doing it. So sort of looking outside for cues and then trying to adapt whatever feels like it matches with this new thing on the outside and going like, well, I guess Buttercup is probably, I mean, that's probably the way I should be experiencing the prom. And then to sort of have that
same relationship to, you know, well, this part of it I know how to do because I was educated, but there wasn't a class on how to dress as a physician. That part is lost on me. So, you know, look around. It's a contemporary comparison, or there is some sort of like latent thing buried in your mind that's like, let's see, what doctors have I seen on television and what were they wearing? Like, you know, our brains try to recognize patterns. Our brains try to like create whatever feels like it, you know, checks a box somewhere. It totally makes sense, mm-hmm. you know, that you would do that. But I am excited for you that a few years ago you were able to kind of go, now hold on a second. What if I make this look like my own life instead of someone else's?
Yeah. And it was a really nice moment to think like, I am a doctor, so whatever I look like is what a doctor looks like.
Love it.
Now.
Love it.
Because I am one. And so that was a big revelation for me. And I knew, I mean, like a lot of my colleagues, and I don't want to generalize, but especially like my male colleagues, they've been doing their own thing from the beginning. Like I didn't see a lot of them go through this like torturous, like I have to dress this way. Like they'd get flack for like, you're not wearing a tie again. And they'd go, oh, no, and whatever, and move on with their lives because they didn't care. I'm like, why did I contort myself? This is me and I'm just going to dress this way and I'm not violating any, like, I'm not like going around like with a bare midriff or something. I don't mean, I'm not going to get in trouble at work. I can't wear open toe shoes for sanitary reasons.
Understood.
That's fine.
Understood.
I can deal with that. But
yeah,
but like I wear tennis shoes and they're clean. They're fine.
Yeah.
They're not like, I don't know, they're fine. And nobody says anything to me. So I wear tennis shoes to work every day. Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I think that's it's the sort of, I mean, that could sort of be, you know, around the corner from the sort of imposter syndrome that many of us feel as we're
yeah.
growing up. I mean, I feel that way about Sketchfest is the kind of the first thing that pops into my mind is when other people tell you sometimes it takes other people to sort of tell you how they perceive your life. There's some this sort of instinctual response, which it's easy for me to say tends to perhaps come from females more than males, but that's certainly not, you know, a guarantee or a rule that goes, you know, through every time.
Sure.
But this sort of sense right. of apology of like, you know, someone's like, oh, you're a doctor. Wow. You know, and whatever picture they have in their mind, you either feel like you're supposed to kind of conform to, or you feel like you have to apologize for it. Like, well, I am, but I mean, I don't know. And like, that's how, you know, people go like, oh, you started this festival. Like, how long have you been doing it now? And even still sometimes, you know, if I feel like getting even to like the 10-year-old mark, I still felt like, so, you know, whatever I felt like the positive perception came along with that, I just couldn't accept or own. I had to be like, oh, I don't know. It just, we just kind of keep doing it. I don't know. And sometimes I still say that. And sometimes it still feels that way. But part of it is this sort of like, oh, you probably have this idea of what this kind of person is. And do I have a responsibility to, again, kind of check all those boxes? And a lot of it is just like, you're assuming what someone else thinks. Like, oh, probably someone doesn't want to see a doctor who's not wearing heels if it's a woman. Like, oh, wait, that's the problem. That doesn't have to be true at all. Someone could be really excited that you're in sneakers.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's really, I have that. I know exactly what you mean. I have that inclination because I'll say that sometimes people will be like, oh, you're a doctor. And I'm like, I mean, I'm a family doctor. It's no big deal. It's just, you know, just a thing. Like, whatever. And like, it's nothing. I don't know what you think about me because of that or why you think that's a cool thing. But it's probably not true about me because I'm not any of those things. And I'll write that off. And I've been very cognizant of it since I've had children. Especially the apologizing thing, because my older daughter, Charlie, already will like, I'll say, oh, honey, be careful. Don't spill something or whatever. And she'll go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like instantly.
Yeah.
And I know she's, it's gotta be my fault. And then I'll think like, stop apologizing. Don't do it to the next generation.
Yeah.
Don't pass this trait on. And so I spend a lot of time looking at her going, you don't have to apologize for that. Now, when you hit daddy because he won't let you have another popsicle. You do have to apologize for that. That is an I'm sorry, but that's not an I'm sorry. And I spend a lot of time saying that to her. Don't apologize. And then I'll look at myself in the mirror and go, you either.
Seriously?
You don't apologize either.
Absolutely. Oh, I think that's very heartening. And I get it. And I'm excited that you have an awareness of that, and that you are dedicated to, you know, not imparting that. Because that is, you know, there are so many things that we pass on, whether it's directly to our offspring or whether it's just culturally. And mm-hmm. you know, staying open-minded to the idea that those things don't have to be as institutionalized as they are and indoctrinated as they are that's a good thing to keep track of. And it's also like exhausting with certain things. So it's, you know, it's like work we all are trying to do. And but also I feel like we also don't need to be hard on ourselves about, you know, the fact that it takes time, you know, and that it's like it takes a village,
sure,
so to speak. Well, Sydney,
yeah, well, no, oh, and it's taken, I mean, I'm 35. It's taken me 35 years to develop my apologizing habit. I'm not going to break it just because I've become aware of it in the last year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, welcome back to my dear, dear friend, Hal Loveland.
Thank you
who
for having
is,
me.
Has promised to get me out of a extreme legal quandary.
I said I'd help. I said I'd try.
Let me ask you this. Are you familiar with using legal problems, using the metaphor, an endless mine, like a mine shaft, like a pit mm-hmm. that yeah. no one knows where the bottom is?
I've heard of that. Yes.
That is where I am right now, because I have told everyone that I will get 25,000 new members to Max Fun. You know what else is a good metaphor for? The bottomless amount of love and support that this network continues to receive from its listeners.
Yes.
There's no end to it. If you try to look down there, you're like, hello, hello, hello. Where does your selfishness begin? you're never going to hear an echo back. You're never going to hear an answer.
Yeah.
Because the depth of commitment and love that Max Fun listeners give to this network is boundless.
And I think becoming a member and supporting Janet directly by checking the box for the JV Club when you're asked what podcast you listen to when you set up that monthly contribution.
That sounds important.
That's how she'll know that you love her and that you are here with her. But
otherwise, I'll feel so alone.
In addition to the feeling you'll get knowing yeah. that you've brought love into Janet's life, there are amazing gifts at every level, and they stack.
Yeah.
We're gonna tell you about some of them. And no, if we start at the $5 level and we go up to 35, at the 35, you'll get the gifts for the 20, the 10, and the 5.
You still get those.
Did I sound like Joey Tribbiani when I said the 20, the 10, and the 5? I feel like when I say that, it's not like an impression, but I hit that Friends rhythm. Yes.
If I give 2 milliliters of plasma, what level do I get to with the Max Fun Drive?
Well, don't do that. I think it's illegal to mail blood. That's first.
Okay.
I don't think you can send
but
blood via the internet.
You should donate blood to this drive. That's how drive works. It's my
it's
first
different
one.
Drive.
Have
it's
I been?
Different.
Yeah, because
no,
I've never done this before.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Okay.
You. This is money.
Okay.
So we start at like $5 a month.
Great.
No blood.
Great.
No plasma. You get bonus content not only from your show,
yeah.
but from every show on the network. It's over 100
deal.
Hours of bonus content.
Very much appreciated and beloved. And thank you for maybe giving up that one, like, fancy drink that you would have either in the morning or in the evening.
Yeah.
Save the money. Donate it once a month to MaximumFun.org/donate.
What is your bonus episode?
My bonus episode.
Oh, yes.
I got a bonus episode. It's going to blow you away because it's not even just a one-on-one interview with me.
What?
It is a cavalcade of laughs.
Oh.
As brought to you by the SF Sketchfest performance of The Bat, Improv in the Dark.
Oh.
That I did at SF Sketchfest. The recording exists nowhere else except
wow.
here at Max Fun.
Exclusive.
It has performers James Richmouth from Casper Hauser, a
yes.
Maximum Fun friend and contributor. It has Danny Pudi from Community.
Yes.
It has Gary Anthony Williams, one of the funniest guys of all time.
So sweet. So
it
great.
Has Scott Adsit from 30 Rock,
the master.
Also one of the master improvisers, right?
Yes.
And my friend and colleague from SF Sketchfest and many other things like Rift Tracks, Cole Stratton.
Yes.
I know that sounds like it's me and a bunch of hilarious boys. That's how it worked out. I'm okay with it. I'm really okay with it.
Let's jump it up to $10 a month. How do you feel about pins?
I love pins. I'm wearing 3 pins right now. Yeah. What I have not wearing yet, because I only just recently saw it and I'm excited to put my grubby mitts on it, is the JV Club enamel pin. It's a cootie catcher / fortune teller. You know those little things where it's folded up pieces of paper? It looks like a little origami. You stick your hands up in there. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, back and forth. You know what I'm doing. You guys are doing that in your head. And then you go like, okay. And then you fold open an answer and you get either a question, if it's me asking it on my podcast, or maybe you get an answer that's going to tell you your future with whether or not the person you have a crush on is going to go out with you.
Yeah.
They will go out with you, by the way, if you go to MaximumFun.org/donate. I'm just saying that's a known fact.
$20 a month.
$20 a month.
How about a puzzle?
I love puzzles of all kinds.
If you love Max Fun, you want to know what it looks like outside the window at sunset, which is sounds like a weird thing to say, but it is beautiful because
you get
the lake.
First of all, the view from this beautiful place is wonderful.
Yeah.
It reflects the joy that is inside this office.
And it's got a rocket in the background, the Max Fun rocket.
Oh, man. Everyone knows the Max Fun rocket logo.
Which is launched from downtown every every month.
That's right.
We have a launch.
We all salute it.
Yeah.
And then we say the Pledge of Allegiance to Maximum Fun, which we're not going to share with you right now because that's it. I think if you do like a $250 a month pledge,
you get your own.
I will personally write you a Maximum Fun Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, right.
I will personally write you that Pledge of Allegiance.
Right. Yeah. That's at that level.
So that you can know you're saying it with the rest of us when the rocket launches.
Right. So go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yes.
You enter your information, including credit cards, so that it's set up. You can set it and forget it. And don't forget, the most important part, it will ask what shows you listen to. The shows that you check off will be the ones that benefit directly from that contribution. If you don't check it off, you're helping the network, in which case, thank you very much. But you want Janet to benefit directly, so check that JV Club box. Go do it right now. Hit pause
just
on
right
this.
Now. Just right now.
And when you come back, you'll hear the rest of this episode.
Yeah. It's going to be great. I would like to get into this MASH game with you as the minutes are going faster than I ever could have thought. I can't believe we've been talking for as long as we have. I feel like I say that all the time, but that's just a tribute to guests being wonderful and knowing I could talk for hours. But so let's get into our MASH game here. Let's start with you and Justin are going to prom as adults. So you have this opportunity to dress however you want, 3 different styles that you can just go totally nuts with or be super simple with for this grown-up prom opportunity. And let's assume that that's a level playing field comfort-wise. So it really is just about kind of what have you never tried or what, you know, what would you never be able to get away with, but here in this and in this context, it can be anything. Three different things for your grown-up prom.
3 different things for my grown-up prom. So first, I've never tried to go like full like suit, like nice looking suit.
Yep.
And I would love, in this world where I could pull it off, I would love to try that.
Love it.
I always loved you mentioned like the dress with the combat boot. My sister Taylor always rocked that look, and she was much cooler than me. She still is. And I always thought, like, if I could pair like a frilly prom dress with combat boots, like that total, I don't know, like punk prom thing, man,
great.
I would do that.
Great.
I never thought I was cool enough to pull it off.
Punk prom. Got it.
And then I guess last, what if I just am, if I'm embracing comfort, it would probably be a skort, right? What's more comfortable than a skort?
Fantastic.
Just a skort and a nice, you know, long sleeve top.
Great.
There you go.
I love it. That's exactly what we're after here. Perfect. Okay. Next question. Since I have the Princess Bride on my mind, let's go ahead and do the category of 3 movies that you can jump into, be in the world, hanging out with the characters. You're not reliving the plot. You're just like, that's just an opportunity for you to just dive into that world.
I mean, is Princess Bride on the table?
It's all on the table. Absolutely.
Sure.
Right.
Princess Bride. I mean, I think I got to say Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume I'll have magical powers.
Oh, sure.
And then one more. You know, how about It's a Wonderful Life?
Great.
It's just so nice.
Great. Wonderful Life. Beautiful.
Okay, great. Let's do three places in the world that you would like to have a second home if getting there were not a pain at all.
One is still in the U.S. It's probably not as far for you, but somewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's so beautiful up there.
Yeah.
It's a pain for me to get there.
Yeah.
I will tell you that.
Yeah.
It's not easy to get out of West Virginia to go anywhere.
Uh-huh.
Bath, England.
Oh, wonderful.
Justin and I went there right before we started having kids. That was like our last trip. And I loved it there. And then, you know, I've never been there, but man, I've always wanted to go. Sydney, Australia, because, you know, we share our name.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to get you down there. It's great.
I want to go.
Yeah, I see that in your future. I see that in your future. If that's one of those places where once you've gone, like that was absolutely 100% true for me. I thought, oh, I'll never go to New Zealand or Australia. Like, wait, who decided that? Why did that? When did that become a truth?
Yeah.
and then I got invited to go for like a Comic-Con and I went, and then it was like, oh, wait, you can just go here. Like, this is just it's a long flight, but there's nothing about it that, I don't know. There was some sort of, there's some sort of block, in my mind that was like, well, unless I have a reason to go, you know, it's just such a long way, but then you go and, you know, you'll just be so glad that you went. 'Cause it's a lovely, I would say, as long as you're going to Australia, definitely go to New Zealand as well. I'm going to plan all this out for
all
you.
All right. We got to do it.
Plan it all.
No, we've
out.
Got to.
Yeah. Let's go with three characters from perhaps literature of some kind that you that are real, that you have this sort of long, lifelong friendship with.
That are real?
Like, these fictional characters. In our alternate reality, we have turned them into real people. Or real creatures, I guess. It doesn't have to be a human.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Mary from The Secret Garden.
Oh,
gosh, I read
Mary.
That book so many times as a kid.
Yeah.
And I know she starts out so unpleasant, but like she grows.
That's right.
And I feel like I can connect to that.
That's right.
Let's see. You know, I'm going to throw in a curveball. I'm going to say I feel like Jacob from Twilight seems like he'd be a good buddy.
Ooh, that is a curveball. Great.
And then, you know, maybe like Samwise Gamgees.
Yeah, there
Come
you
on.
Go. There
He's always
you
there
go.
For you.
Wonderful. Okay, next category. Let's do three... let's do three professions that can be as out there or as grounded as you want, that in this alternate universe you get to try on for size. And let's just assume, like, you know, like there's no downside. You don't have to worry about like, well, I would have been interested in doing this, but then that would mean I'd have to XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist in this alternate universe.
Well, first of all, I have often wished I'd gone into like political science so I could be like a political operative.
Ooh,
I think West Wing made me wish that.
Oh,
I wish I like ran campaigns and was a political operative.
Yeah, that really was the
so
sort
exciting.
Of like the best and most poetic of what we what we would imagine and hope American politics would look like.
Exactly. An astronaut.
Great.
Cuz I mean, if you're dreaming big, let's leave the planet.
Absolutely.
And ooh, you know, I always wished I was a sailor.
Great.
I always wish I could be on a boat most of the time.
That's so cool. Now, is that because you have spent time on boats enough to know that you don't, that you're seafaring? You're seaworthy?
I did a summer research project once where I lived on a riverboat for the summer, and we collected water samples and various other, there were a bunch of projects going on, but we went the length of the Ohio River for the summer and just collecting various scientific
Ooh.
samples, and we had to like crew the riverboat while so we had to learn how to be like a crew. Anyway,
that's so cool.
I always wanted to be a river pirate.
You're okay, got it. River pirate, even better than sailor. Very, very good. Now, next category, all due respect to your wonderful husband, whom we love and adore, in this alternate universe, mm-hmm. This is for romantic times. It can absolutely be a fictitious character. Could be, you know, this. Yes, we all know this actor played this character in this movie, so it could just be specific to that one character they played, or, you know, it could be an author. Anybody, sky's the limit, real or fiction, alive or dead, from any era, romantic partners for our alternate universe adventures.
Hawkeye Pierce from MASH.
Amazing.
B1.
You are officially the first person who has picked a MASH character. I'm very excited because this is a MASH game. So it feels like the universe is now folding in on itself in a really delightful way.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm very pleased.
Let's see. Jughead Jones from Archie, though, not Riverdale.
Yes, the OG original Archie. Got it.
And Doc Holliday from Tombstone.
Oh, yeah. Now, are we thinking in the back of our minds the Val Kilmer Doc Holliday, or are we just imagining the actual? Yep. Oh, yeah, good old jaundiced, handsome, sly, exhausted, drunk Val Kilmer Doc Holliday.
Hacking up pieces of his lung. I don't know how he made it sexy, but he did.
He really did. Oh, he really owned it. Those were the glory days, man. Post Real Genius, which also was like, who is this impish creature?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Those were the days. Okay. Next category, three foods. I can extend it out to substances and drinks if you prefer. But three foods that in our reality are either bad for you, you're allergic to them, maybe they don't feel kind of ecologically conscious. In this alternate reality, for whatever reason, this thing is good for you. There's nothing wrong with eating it. You can eat it in perpetuity with zero negative ramifications.
Well, so I can pick beer.
Yep, 100%.
Beer would be number one.
Done. Got it.
yeah, I guess I need to be more specific than Taco Bell.
Not at all. You absolutely can put that out there. The genre.
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell genre. Uh-huh. Perfect.
And probably pizza rolls.
Oh, pizza rolls. Got it. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Okay. Love it. Now, let's show up, Justin, and give you the ability to play any instrument so that he can no longer lord it above you that you're in show choir and he actually could play an instrument.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, first, I'm trying to learn how to play piano, so let's go ahead and pick piano, because I can fast forward and
that's
be done
right.
with the learning
part.
We're
going to make you a virtuoso overnight.
Guitar, because it's just so cool, right? That's the cool one. And then drums, because they secretly are cooler, I think.
Agreed.
Not given enough credit.
Agreed on all counts. Yeah. Agreed on all counts. Okay, this is just the part where I get my little sort of number that I'm going to use to do the eeny, meeny, miny, mo very professional process with this MASH game. So real quick, just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Great. I am going to, let's see, what I've been doing for our remote podcasts, since it's easier on Max Fun to sync everything up if it's just one continuous file, is to have you, while I do this, to have you tell the wonderful listeners, most of whom I'm sure are already very familiar with and fond of you, vis-a-vis the Max Fun universe, but tell everybody kind of what you have going on and where they can check it out, if you don't mind.
Okay, thanks. Well, I do a podcast called Sawbones with my husband, Justin, where we talk about medical history, and he makes jokes about it. And you can check that out at MaximumFun.org, as well as the other podcast I do, Still Buffering, which is a show about being a teenager then and now. I'm not one now, but I do it with my two sisters, and my little sister Riley is still a teenager. And so we talk about teens, and that's also at MaximumFun.org. And we have a book that we wrote last year, the Sawbones book, that's based on the same stuff that our podcast is about. And you can get that anywhere that books are sold, essentially.
I will say you guys did Sawbones. We worked it out so that you could be in town literally one night before you had to be up in the Pacific Northwest, in fact, for the podcast festival.
Yes.
And that was like the biggest complaint of so many people, was that they had one chance to see Sawbones and it was in a smallish area of the Natural History Museum where we, you know, sort of take over for a night. And there were a lot of people who were very bitter that they did not get to see you guys. So we'll have to rectify that for next year.
Well, sure. We'd be up for it. I'm sorry to hear that, but I will say that room, the Africa room, was amazing. It was such a cool venue to do a show.
Someone told me I had to be at other shows that night, and someone told me that the leopard that they have that sort of sticks out on a tree where everything else is just in diorama behind glass, was it roars periodically, and apparently they couldn't get it to stop roaring for a minute. So I don't know if you're around for that. Did that happen?
Absolutely true. That is absolutely true. It's on the recording and everything.
The scene stealing.
It was good though.
Oh, that's fantastic. all I can say is I have to assume that cat is now named Isadora.
That's I took it home, named it Isadora,
and then sent Isadora, and then your dad dropped it back off. Yeah, at the Natural History Museum. Okay, Sydney, I have your MASH future. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I think you will feel the same. A lot of these things of align for me. They sort of make a. Sometimes it happens where there seems like there's some kind of organic sense to all of this, and I do feel that has happened here. I want to first tear off the Band-Aid and let you know that you did get a shack. It was not a mansion, apartment, or house. You do have a shack.
That's too bad.
It is in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. I'm going to assume shack in this case substitutes out for cabin.
So
you have a beautiful cabin where you're really getting a chance to take in just the beautiful surroundings of the Pacific Northwest, because I share your love of that area. Now, I also want to, you know, this actually makes sense too, because as a drummer, you're going to want to go ahead and practice a lot. You want to be somewhere remote so that you're not driving your neighbors crazy with the intense beats that
That's
you're
good.
Blasting out into the world. So as a drummer, it also makes sense to me that you're up there in your beautiful cabin. I want to congratulate you on your friendship with the adorable Mary, who also wants to find a wonderful place in nature that's kind of her own secret garden, if you will. I responded very positively to that book as well. This idea of feeling displaced and then finding this kind of paradise is it just really speaks to me. So
so that
worked out on all levels. You also have the opportunity to jump into the world of Harry Potter at will.
All right.
You also have had a successful alternate universe career, and I use the word universe aptly, because as an astronaut you have experienced life beyond this planet as we know it. Side note, I finally got around to watching the Flat Earth documentary on Netflix, and it was infuriating fascinating, but well worth watching. And then that leaves us with a couple of other pieces of good news. One of which is that you have access to unlimited Taco Bell with zero negative ramifications,
which
that's kind of saying a lot. And all of this to me, again, it just makes sense that of everyone that you ended up with, this idea of you going to your punk prom, we're just going to cast Justin aside for a second, even though I said you were going with him, because this idea of you going to a punk prom as an adult with Doc Holliday really works. It just really, really
it
works.
It really does.
Right? I see it. I see him coughing up a piece of his lung in his like Western punk rock outfit, because that's exactly what he was wearing. He was like very punk rock for the Wild West. And this is going to be a fantastic night to remember.
I love this.
So,
I love so, this yeah. whole, I'm on board.
Yeah, this is all, it just all flows. It's all very like punk rock fantasy world from start to finish, up to and including unlimited Taco Bell. So thank you. Cindy, thank you so much for doing the podcast. This has been a pleasure and a joy. In a perfect world, it would be in person. So maybe we'll have the opportunity to do fun stuff together in real life. But for the meantime, what a pleasure and a joy. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been absolutely so much fun. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Yay! Okay, cool. And for the rest of you guys, I will talk to you next time on the podcast. All right, friends, that's it. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I just want to take this opportunity to remind you to support the JV Club with a monthly membership by going to MaximumFun.org/donate now. Once you do, you're going to be so happy and excited. Jasper, if I could just borrow this from you, you're going to find yourself making this sound. Until you have an exorcism.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.